Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of a soon-to-be branded turkey series. We haven't figured out what we want to call this yet, but we just want to be talking turkey because, as it sits right now, I am 3 months and 3 weeks away from deer season. I almost said 4 weeks, which would have just been 4 months. But
Time out. You said you're 3 months away from deer season? 3 months away from turkey season?
Turkey season. Yeah. Okay. There you go. You want to redo this? Let's just start over. Yeah, so three and a half months basically from turkey season. That's if I can't find a ute to take with me in the woods that week before. That's always kind of a passion project of mine, is finding an able-bodied ute to go with me out there and let me feed that addiction 1 week early. But, dude, we just had an excellent podcast. This is one of those information overload episodes that you're going to end up with a pile of information. I think it's one that when Joey outlined it, he did a great job of addressing a lot of the questions that our Patreon members will have, because we all have a huge body of turkey hunters, and they're all really new, and there's a lot of apprehension. What do I actually need? What does it do for me? This is one of those episodes.
Joey has a way of asking questions that I think everybody is wondering about things. A lot of times Joey will ask a question and it'll be something that I was thinking, but he says it in a way that sounds smarter than the way I would have said it. Things that maybe feel like entry level questions, but they're not a lot of the time. And I think there's a lot of stuff in this episode in particular about sights and red dots and mounting them and even other stuff, man. Like Joey, he does a great job of preparing, and it's fun for me, like, and I think it's fun for you too, because a lot of time that structure is maybe the thing that I lack. I really like to see, to have a structure created and then be able to work off of that. And so, Greg, though, he just absolutely just crushed it with the knowledge and the product, honestly. Like, it's just a great product. I go on and on about it in the episode about how simple yet effective it is, wishing that I would have been the person who came up with the idea. You know what I mean? It's one of those type things. It's one of those type ideas, right? That you're like, golly, so simple. I wish I would have come up with that.
Yep.
But
like the zip tie.
But the zip tie. Yeah, this is a great example. The great example of a simple but such an effective product. But no, I enjoyed having Greg on here, and be honest with you, it's kind of fun to talk about turkeys in December. So
whenever you're talking turkeys with a bunch of guys who think about turkey a lot, you know, you and I get into a deer hunting mindset for sure, and we get into deer season. But there is seldom a day that goes by that I'm not thinking about turkey to some extent. I was scouting the other day and I found turkey sign and I dropped a turkey pin and I'm like, I'm coming right back here to this scratch in the spring. And so I'm excited because we're kicking off what is my favorite time of the year, right before Christmas. You guys will probably hear this sometime in January, but stay tuned because Joey is going to be taking a big lead in a lot of our turkey content. You know, he's been thinking about this for a while. We told you it was coming down the pipe, and I think what you're going to find is he has tailored the episode topics to be relevant for you as you progress through the year. This is going to be a lot of fun. So, I do want to say a couple things about some people that we're partnering with the spring. As it is right now, you guys know that we're running the tethered saddles during deer season. They have the M2 vest. I freaking love that vest. I cannot wait for you guys to have those vests. Those should be coming any day now. to y'all. They are a phenomenal vest. And as a tinkerer, if you listen to this whole podcast and you don't get this from that, we all tinker with our gear for turkey. There's a lot of changing and trying to find both enjoyment in the down season, but also that perfect setup for what you're doing. It's completely modular. You're going to love it. And the seat is perhaps the best part about it. It's got all these different layers of foam, so you can adjust it based on if you have a bony butt or if you're a thick boy with a – spell that B-O-I.
B-O-I. T-H-I-C-C-B-O-I.
Yeah, that's
thick
it.
Thick boy.
Can we make that somehow into like a turkey shirt?
Thick boy, like a big beard.
Yeah.
Like a paintbrush.
Yeah. That's shout out number one. And the shout out number two is Honeycomb Custom Calls. So y'all know last year we raised $385 for Wild Turkey Research, which for a platform our size, just selling mouth calls, that's freaking awesome. And so this year we're bringing back two of the mouth calls. We're going to have the Not Safe for Work, and we're going to have the JB Special as singles. We're not doing the three-pack combo pack. And then throughout the course of the year, we're going to be doing limited runs of friction calls that Daniel, myself, are working on collaborating on. So stay tuned for that. Feel free to go support his website at any point in time. He's a phenomenal guy. He's a turkey nut, and we're happy to be partnering with them as well this year.
Absolutely, man. I got my hands on well, that's not true. I had the diaphragm calls for the whole season. Killed a lot of turkeys with that JB Special. And I think one with the Not Safe for Work, to be honest with you. But when we got to hook up with Daniel at the in Tennessee at the end of the season, he had a few calls that I got to play around with, and some of his friction calls that are just, I mean, works of art, man. Like, just craftsmanship and sound, just absolutely beautiful calls. So I don't think anybody's going to be disappointed by checking out some of his stuff. And I'm excited to keep using it throughout this upcoming spring, man. It's I got it at the very end. We talked about it, I think. Mm-hmm. We may not have talked about it in this episode, but Tennessee made their season longer, and so when I actually got to use this friction call, it was like freaking end of May. Like,
yeah,
basically summertime. And so I'm excited to use them throughout this upcoming season, for the whole season.
Yeah, no, I'm it's a lot of fun. They are truly works of art. He agonizes over the every little sound detail, and I'm not gonna spill his trade secrets, but I can tell you that the man doesn't just make a call, put surfaces in there, put a soundboard in there, and just throw it on the website. Like, if it doesn't perform at this spec, at this size, he cuts it out of the product line entirely. So, and the man, yeah, if you have any issue with it, he's going to stand by his product and get you hooked up. I've seen him do it a handful of times. So with that, man, let's get him onto the episode. This is a long one. We've been really doing some long episodes here for you guys. That's something a lot of you guys request. We're happy to oblige.
Absolutely, dude.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Southern Collective Podcast. We're doing the turkey thing again. I'm sitting here conflicted because to my right, I've got a $1,000 new bow set up, and to my left, I've got Mossberg dipped 870 parts from the gentleman who is on today's episode. And I'm sure a lot of people are wondering why all the new gear. And here's the deal. Parker last year bought a Bottomland dipped bow and then shot like 18, 19 birds. And so I struggled last year.
Bow.
And I saw
I ain't shooting turkeys with bows, dog.
What'd I say?
You said bow.
See, I'm all over the place, man. I'm all over the place. Shotgun in the face. And so I went and bought a dip stock, man. I'm going to look just like you. I'm going to have the black Cerakoted barrel with the Bottomland dip stock. And
you got to have the Bottomland on the turkey gun for sure.
You got to, man. And so my tags are punched, so I got to figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of the year, but counting them as good as punch. But I am joined by Parker himself and a special guest, Greg. Is it Mayer?
Mayhair.
Mayhair. All right.
Mayhair is close enough. Either way.
I would have said Mar. I really would have said Mar if I would have just been reading that myself.
I could see that. But we're building on the trend of turkey content because we are on the brink of turkey season. Mr. Joey Bell himself should join us any moment, but we're going to get started. We got a gentleman that probably everybody knows who he is, but doesn't necessarily know him very well. He's made a hell of a splash in the turkey realm, making shotguns that weren't necessarily compatible with red dots or scopes, suddenly compatible with them. And he's a diehard turkey fanatic. Greg, dude, I appreciate you carving time out of your day. It looks like your taxidermy bill's been paid based on what's behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, so let's tease everybody here. Let's tell them a little bit about you, right?
All right.
How did you get into turkey hunting?
All right. So I didn't grow up turkey hunting. I didn't start turkey hunting until I was, I think my second year in college. I went to Clemson. Grew up close to there, but I grew up fishing. Started deer hunting when I was like 10, bow hunting. Killed my first one when I was 12 with a bow. Killed my first few deer with a bow. And, we just never had anywhere to turkey hunt. My dad wasn't into it. None of his friends were really into turkey hunting. I would ask about it, and, nobody was interested. So, luckily, in college, my friend had always been, he'd been a turkey hunter and a deer hunter, so... like I said, I was at Clemson. We went on some of the public land there. This was, 20 years ago back when, and there's still birds around, but back when they were doing a little bit better than they are today. So I think I killed a Jake my very first hunt, and I was hooked from there. There we go. Yeah. you got to kill a few of them every now and then. So after that, the next year I killed one on my own, and that's really when I got hooked. We kind of still hunted together a little bit, but would go our separate ways. I like hunting with my buddies, but to me, turkey hunting's a one man game. So I like going by myself, being up against the tree by myself. So it was really neat to get my first one alone. So.
Greg, that's interesting because I started turkey hunting by myself, and I would probably say now after having hunted with people, with the right person, if it's somebody who's equal or more, higher level, it is so much stinking fun to turkey hunt with somebody else. But it has to be the right person.
Yep, I agree. So there's, There's certain guys that I would go any day with. It's just, everyone's got different styles, especially as many different styles as there are for deer, there's just as many for turkeys. So, if you find a guy that likes to do it the same way you do, that's when it can really be fun, but I still don't mind going by myself. So 95% of the time I'm by myself, but usually so.
It's interesting, man. We've talked a lot about this. Me and Walter talked about it quite a bit. With our platform, one of the main things that we do is Patreon, which is our Patreon isn't just about giving us support and giving us money or anything like that. It's about kind of building that camaraderie. And so, what I've seen is a lot of guys who are, even through deer season and turkey season, you have a lot of guys who are kind of solo hunters, I guess you could say. But they use that platform as a way to take buddies into the woods without actually having to take buddies into your spots.
Gotcha.
Which is pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see that. And I totally understand where you're at and where you're coming from. Sometimes after I've hunted with a group of people or hunted with somebody else for maybe a few hunts in a row or something like that, or maybe you go on a trip, there's something special about just those solo moments, and being able to just take your time. Turkeys is a big one because everybody has their little differences in how they turkey hunt and how long they sit on a spot, how much they call, how much they, what are they willing to crawl on a turkey or not? There's all the little things in there. So, dude, I totally know where you're coming from. And sometimes being in the woods just by yourself and seeing all that stuff unfold and just being able to take it in without talking is fun. It's nice.
Yeah,
it's
you can take it in a little better now that most of the states are going to one a day. It used to be, you shoot one in the first 30 minutes or an hour. It's all right. Where was that other one? I'm going after him. Now you just have to. I mean, it's a good thing. You get to slow down and enjoy the moment. There's no rush to go shoot another one the same day. So
absolutely.
You get more of those moments now, really, too, as well.
I make it a thing when I kill something, whether it be a deer or a turkey. other than working to get that deer or turkey out of the woods, I'm probably not going to do a lick of work for the rest of the day. Yeah. It's almost a tradition. Agreed. You know what I mean? So, like, just take your time. Get out of the woods whenever you can. You got all day to do it.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Yeah,
that's for sure. I get it, man.
Yeah. It's funny, as the by far and again least versed turkey hunter, Clay is actually, I regard him as my turkey hunting mentor. He got me into it in the spring of 2020 when everybody had free time. And I immediately fell down the rabbit hole. I grew up on a turkey reservation. The ultimate irony is I saw one turkey track the entire time I was there. There was just no good habitat for turkeys.
Did you say you grew up on a high-fence turkey farm?
Pretty much.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where all the beards come from. I just picked them up every shed season. Just went around and picked up the beards. It was funny because I'd grow around. There's these faded NWTF and, you know, turkey conservation zone, no turkey hunting. And I desperately wanted to turkey hunt growing up, but I had no one to take me. And the public land had this, like, stigma of it's not worth your time. It's going to be terrible hunting. And we tried it a couple times, and I caught a bird in and the shooting range and completely screwed the pooch. But with all that said, I really prefer hunting with these other fellas more so than hunting by myself. I'll go regardless, but I just learned so much. It'll be just like a cadence that Joey uses, or a cadence that a calling sequence that Parker uses, and then seeing how it to me, sitting with your back to a tree and a bird laying at your feet with a buddy, that is just, I mean, it can be so much fun.
Yeah. So back to one of the things you said about the public land, about there being a stigma of it not, you know, not being good or being crowded, man. It does have that, but I enjoy it mainly because you can just roam. You know, I hate, you know, even a 50, 60, 70 acre piece of property that you might show up, and if there's not a bird on it, you know, it's over with. You know, you can sit there and wait if you want, but if you go to a public piece, you can put your boots on the ground and move until you find one. So that's one of the reasons that I like that as well. So most of mine are killed on public, not for any reason, not that I'm trying to make it harder on myself. It's just I enjoy it more because you can move and try to find one if there's not one where you park the truck.
If I had the ability to roam on private, I'd never set foot on public. I could turkeys.
Yeah, you could roam and just go if you had big pieces. Yeah. Yep.
Go ahead, Parker.
Greg, when did you in this kind of like journey of becoming a turkey hunter, when did it become something that you're like, man, I feel like this is something I really want to not only invest my time in learning to be a turkey hunter, but try to build a career in the turkey hunting world with a pretty niche thing, I would say, like a very niche product.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd always dreamt of not going to work for someone else from 8 to 5 every day. It was just kind of, you know, I did work in the industry. I was a mechanical engineer. My background is really civil engineering with a bachelor's and master's from Clemson. But I did more mechanical stuff and just was hoping one day I could figure out a way to make money without doing that. So in 2017 is when I actually quit my day job. I had other, you know, reselling stuff. I was in, I was into, and that's about the time I started coming up with the mount idea. I had just seen on forums, Facebook groups, online forums, turkey forums like Old Gobbler, Gobbler Nation, those two, you know, people might ask, how can you mount a red dot on this? How can I mount a red dot on my 870, you know, with that's not drilled and tapped? And I'd see people ask, and I was just thinking about it. And then I looked and I was like, well, I don't see any reason you couldn't mount it to the rib. You know, we might mount one on there and it doesn't work, but you know, I can try it. What do I care? So it was 2017, 2018, you know, those few years is when I really hunted with it a little bit, tried it out. And once we fully released it to the public in 2020, it's just been through the roof since then. So it's growing every year still.
It's insane, man. I wonder, there's ideas like that come out. I see it in saddle hunting a lot.
Yeah.
Just like little tiny, smaller products, you know, and you think, like, especially with something like a shotgun, and I know red dots haven't been out for just a super, super long time, but they've been out for long enough. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty crazy being the guy that came up with that need, you know, that fixed that need. Like, it, like, how did somebody not think about that earlier? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
thought, I'm sure
the first time
would,
I saw your stuff.
You know, the thing is, people had probably thought of it and just didn't know how to, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if someone had made their own and, you know, just used it on their own and didn't, you know, no one really knew about it. They didn't have the drive to build a company around it. But, you know, that's pretty much the one product that we sold for the first 3 years. We've added a few things since then. Now we sell optics as well. So that really, you know, if somebody comes to me and needs them out, most likely they're going to need the red dot as well. So luckily I've added that. But yeah, it's just, people kind of think it's a little bit goofy until they try it. I get guys all the time that, you know, so I'll have a booth at the NWTF convention. That's where we released it in 2020. So then we kind of, in 21, they went to the virtual convention, which, you know, that's hard. It, you know, people can't see the product. It's a lot harder to sell it. So we have that booth and I have guys that come by and they're like, yeah, man, I've always had it right back here, right in front of my eye. That's, you know, and I've heard people saying that's the preferred location. Until I used it, and 95% of the people that come by the booth and try it out there on the rib or order one, they prefer it out there once they give it a try. So it's just kind of one of those things that's backwards from what everyone's always been told, and it's really the to me the best location for one. So yeah.
Well, if you think
Go ahead.
If you think about it, the same red dots that you're putting on these shotguns are the same ones that are used on pistols. You hold a pistol up here close to your face, you got it at least at arm's length.
Yep.
So it, you know, it makes sense.
And one of the main things about that too is that glass that you're looking through is never going to be as clear as just your eye. So when it's back here and everything you see is through that glass, why not get it further away from you? It's taking up less of your field of vision. Almost when the bird gets into that window, he's almost in the dot. It's almost time to pull the trigger. So you can see around it a lot better as well.
Greg, did you have a lot of prototyping that you had to do with the original stuff? Or was it just pretty much like, holy cow, this was easy to make? Because it seems simple. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So the first one that I machined, I mean, I had a shop that did it. I didn't do it myself. But the first one that we tried is the one that I started selling. But the only issue with that first iteration that was sized to the size of the rib that you had. So it was a huge headache. You know, I took a bunch of different sizes with me that first year. And, you know, I'd have people stop by and they're like, I've got this gun. What one do I need? So I'd look on my little notepad and I was like, I think you need this because there's all the way. Now Benelli has a 5.5 millimeter. So there's 5.5 millimeter rib, 6 millimeter. There's one a little bit bigger than that. Remington is an odd size, which is 291. I won't bore you with all the different sizes, but like between 5.5 millimeters and 10 millimeters, there's about 7 or 8 different sizes. So it was, you know, I had a bunch out and people would call me. I'm like, most people don't have calipers at home to measure their rib. So I'm fighting that. And then I'd get people that did and they would say, I need this size. I'm like, well, I don't make that. So now I have to start making that one and saying it's for this gun. And then companies will change their rib from year to year or gun to gun. And it was a huge headache. So after selling those for a year, The first big change that we made was to go to the universal mount that comes with all the different adapters for the different ribs. There's still every now and then I get someone that has some oddball gun that most likely never heard of that has a different sized rib, and you know, I try to make everybody happy. I'll make them what they need. So it was a headache at first, though. But the first prototype we put on a gun, you know, it was, of course, it was made specific for that gun. Use it for a couple of years with no issues. So it was kind of a simple thing that ended up working.
That's awesome.
Yep.
It's a real simple concept. I remember when I ordered mine back, I ordered one back in 2020.
Yeah.
And you're talking
probably
about all
the sized one then.
Yeah, you're talking about all the different rib sizes. I remember I was getting the tape measure out and I was trying to measure my rib and I'm trying to measure in millimeters. And if you're off by like half of like 1.1, you know, millimeter or whatever, then the thing might not work right. And I was just worried to death that I wouldn't get it right and this thing would be all jacked up. So when I saw that you had, you know, you started putting in the rib adapter kits,
yep,
I was like, man, that's money right there. You can just crank those things out then. You don't have to worry about anything. And I also like that it's so simple to install. And you have, you know, the torque, you know, the foot, is it foot pounds or what's
inch
the...
on those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Inch pounds just because it's so small, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I wanted to ask you, too, can you over-tighten it? Like, can you tighten it so much that it kind of affects how the red dot sits on the mount?
Not really. So the only thing, you know, I test them at home. So most of our screws that we use end up needing 12 inch pounds. That's really more than the spec into the 70-75 aluminum, which is what we use. That's more than the spec calls for. I just know that, you know, I don't want somebody to barely tighten it and, you know, think, oh, that's not tight enough. So we call out up to 12, but I've tested them up to 25 or so with no issues. You know, I haven't stripped any out. I get people every now and then that, you know, they may not have any way to check the torque. They might strip one out if they just really crank down on it. But yeah, as far as the optic, so the optics are kind of different than the mount. A lot of times the optic manufacturer will specify what it's supposed to be. So it's a little bit different than, you know, like on scope rings. Scope rings, you know, you can damage a scope by torquing that too much. At least on most of the red dots, you're just kind of going into, you know, a solid piece of metal. So you're really, unless you really are just He-Man, you're probably going to strip the head out before you were to damage it for the most part. So
do you recommend putting Loctite on those screws?
Yeah. So we send Loctite with it. Every mount comes with Loctite for now. We've contemplated not doing that. I think it gives everyone a little extra security. It's just something that people like to have. If, you know, they don't have to go buy a $5, $6, $7 bottle of Loctite. It comes with a little enough to use a few times. So that's another thing. The optics manufacturers, some of them just don't recommend it. Most of them don't have a problem with it. But the easiest thing is just when you have your red dot, whatever they say to, if they say to use it, use it. But I recommend just using it on the mount because we don't have any issues with that.
Did you have any issues with, like, I guess, in the beginning, trying to get things just right for, as far as, like, recoil? You know what I'm saying? Like, different shotguns have different amounts of recoil, and that recoil is going to greatly affect the performance of your red dot, right? Yeah. Did y'all have any issues with that in the beginning?
No issues with that. So, if it's just the red dots in general, you know, I mean, they're designed for the recoil. I get questions a lot of time. I think there's an A5 where the barrel actually moves in the, is that right? Is anybody familiar with that gun? I'm not personally, but I think the barrel actually slides back when it recoils or something. And, you know, I have people that are concerned about it, but, you know, we've not had any issues with that.
I only asked that question because from the consumer side, when you think about putting in one other element, right? Like a third party element into something, that would be probably my main concern, is like, I wouldn't want to put something there. Obviously I have friends like Joey who do all the research and know all the things, and they can tell me what I need to buy. So
there you go.
I'm not too worried about it, but I could imagine somebody listening might be thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
But we talked a lot about the actual mount, but I don't know that we have literally explained what it does. For anybody who maybe doesn't know what Meadow Creek is, maybe hasn't heard of it, or maybe they've found themselves in a situation like a lot of people did, where they can't mount the red dot scope and they don't know that you exist. So tell us just like kind of in layman's terms what exactly this mount does.
Yeah, so basically it just allows you to mount, and, you know, I use the term red dot optic very, very broadly. You know, there's green dots, there's red circles. Red dot, to me, is just a reflex sight or a holographic sight. So any kind of small, we also sell the little tubular ones. But it allows you to put that on your shotgun. It mounts onto the ribs, and you don't have to modify the weapon at all. You don't have to drill and tap the receiver. So, you know, a lot of guys either don't want to pay to drill and tap. They just don't want holes in their gun for whatever reason. You know, it's a lot easier to put it on and go, take it off without, you know, having the extra holes that water can get in or whatever in your receiver. So that's the gist of it. That's pretty much it.
That's the biggest benefit is being able to do all that without, you know, damaging the gun in any way, even though that might sit there forever. You never mess with the integrity of that gun, and that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason I designed it, was so that you didn't have to modify the gun. But then after you use it, that's when you kind of see the other benefits to it. So
I think I really love the idea of being able to use some of my granddad's guns without having to alter my granddad's gun. Not that, you know, because I think my granddad had some of these older guns that didn't have sights on them. With the advent of sights, he probably would have drilled and tapped the gun anyways and had the sight put on there. But, you know, the sentimental value is in the way that it looks, and the ability to put this on and then just at any point in time take it off and go shoot skeet with it or rabbits or whatever and not change anything. I think there's a variety of guns you just don't really want to drill into. I think I look at a lot of those over and unders that really appeal to me that have that rib. I've called several of the shops and they're like, hey, if you get some of those older over and unders, yes, they have choke tubes, but there's not enough material there for me to tap. And I'm like, well, if those are the really cool ones, I want to tow into the woods anyways.
Yeah.
And you can pass down granddad's shotgun to Walden and not have to give him your red dot. You can keep that for yourself.
Yeah. Greg, are there any optics manufacturers that have just such a strange footprint that you haven't modified the mount to work with yet?
So yes, as far as our direct mounts, but we also make the Picatinny mount. So, you know, pretty much I can't say everyone, but I don't know of any red dots that you can't. They either don't come with a Picatinny mount or you can't get that from the manufacturer. So we have the Picatinny rail that goes on the rib. It does make the optics sit higher because you've got a Picatinny, you know, you've got the Picatinny rail, then you've got a Picatinny mount, then you've got the optic where, you know, all the ones like the, say, the Burris Fastfire, the Vortex Venom, they mount directly to the real thin plate that goes on the rib. So to answer your question, yes and no. There's a lot that we don't have the direct mount for, but we have the Picatinny that'll work for pretty much all of them. A lot of these optics manufacturers will have a mount or have a red dot that, you know, is some kind of off the wall. I don't know why they do it. I don't have answers for why there's not an industry standard for all of them. You know, there's still three or four major ones that we make the mounts for. I wish they all would use the same one. I think a lot of times it's if that manufacturer also makes guns, they want, you know, you buy their gun, they're going to want you to put an optic that they make on it. So that's part of it. But still, there's pretty much we can do it if it's made.
So I had a big, I guess, like, aha moment this past spring. Not really a moment. I just got peer pressured by all my friends to put a red dot on my new gun more than anything. And I saw a ton of benefits from it. Honestly, I did. As far as like the sight picture, being able to really focus on that head rather than just try to cover up the whole waddle with my BB on the end, you know, or my fiber optic on the end. I saw a ton of benefits, and I want to know from a guy who is making a living right now in that particular part of the industry. What would you say are the biggest benefits to using a red dot over your traditional, you know, fiber optic or BB on the end?
Yeah, so like you said, the ease of aiming, you know, that that dot on a reflex sight. All right, so imagine you've got the window and you've got the dot in the middle of it. It doesn't matter where your head is. If your head is moved and the dot is down in the corner of the window, that doesn't matter. That stays on target. So wherever that dot is, after you've got it sighted in, is where it's going to hit. So turkey hunters know, you get in odd situations. You're sitting this way and he pops up over there, starts to come. You have to lean around a tree. It doesn't matter where your head's at. If the dot's on it, that's where it's going to hit. So that's the biggest benefit to me of having a red dot. And just, you know, it's a lot easier to line up whether you're coming from just a bead on the end of the shotgun and you're having to hope you're straight behind it, or you're trying to line up, you know, a rear sight with a front sight and get those lined up. It's still just getting on the bird is a lot quicker and easier. A lot of times it happens fast. He pops up at 40 yards and looks for a second, he's gone. And with a red dot, you can get it on him and shoot and it's over with. So that's the main benefit to me to go into a red dot in general.
I didn't even realize that was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Like, whenever I first started it, like, I guess I heard people talking about it. I'm not a big gun guy, right? So I don't shoot a lot of pistols. I never have bought a red dot for anything. And so whenever I first used it and I kind of saw that aspect that you're talking about, I maybe heard people explain it, but actually seeing it and testing it, right? Like, when you're out just shooting the gun for the first time or sighting it in, and you can kind of move like drastically, like almost too much.
I get people to do that when I show it at the convention or whatever. I say, all right, aim at a spot up there on the ceiling and move your head around. And they're like, oh, it does stay on target. You know, it's kind of, you have to visualize it and see what it really doesn't move. It moves in the window, but on the target, it stays in one spot.
One of the big things I think that's, one of the largest benefits to using a red dot is just being able to, like Parker said, sight the thing in. You know, before, when you'd pattern your turkey gun, like if the shells you had were shooting low, you just had to aim high. You had to throw that Kentucky windage in there.
Yep.
And it wasn't, you know, sometime later, I forget who, you know, True Glow or whoever, you know, released the fiber optics that you could actually adjust, and, you know, that made things better. But I mean, I don't want to sit here and say that, you know, every load will work for any gun and anything like that, but you can put that red dot and you can put that pattern literally anywhere you want to, you know, with the dot. You know, you don't have to aim high or aim low or worry about shooting to the left or to the right. I mean, it's like a rifle. Once you got it set, it's set and ready to go.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Yeah, I've gone through, you know, in the last 10 years, 10, 12, 15 different turkey guns, just trying, and I keep plenty on hand if somebody's going with me, and I could probably count on a couple fingers how many have hit dead center on where you're aiming, whether that's, off 3 or 4 inches at 40 yards or off a foot. You know, I've not had very many that are true point of aim, point of impact. So having that red dot, whether you're being able to adjust it just a little bit, is huge.
Well, I think some of those European guns, they shoot high anyway because of the way they shoot over there.
Yep.
I noticed that with my Benelli. And Benelli gets a cussing from a lot of people because out of the box they shoot high, but they're designed to shoot high. But you put a red dot on there and you eliminate that problem.
Yeah. I see arguments from people. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go for it.
I see arguments from people on forums because I'm on Facebook forums all the time. People asking, or people saying, oh, there's no need for a red dot. You don't aim a shotgun. But when you're turkey hunting, you aim a shotgun. You know, it's not you're going to need to. But, it's a lot different than just pulling up to shoot a dove or whatever, even though there has been a growing community of guys that are using red dots on their wing shooting guns. I've done it for dove hunting. I don't personally duck or goose hunt myself, but I have a lot of guys using them. I'll have people call. They say, I've got a, you know, I like to shoot trap, skeet, sporting clays. And after they put it on there, I had a guy probably 6 months ago. He did it and sent me back his little sticker that said 25 of 25. He was happy with it. So it works for that as well.
I still see I still see every now and then, I'll see somebody with the old, I guess you can call them old school now, but the turkey scopes. It just looks like a legit rifle scope on top of the turkey gun. Are you seeing those go away now? And I can't imagine having that big old thing on top of my shotgun.
When I first started getting into, you know, when I started turkey hunting, it was a Remington 870, 3.5 inch, you know, number 4 rim nitro turkey, you know, lucky to put one or two pellets in a beer can at 40 yards. I mean, it's just, you were hoping when you shot it at 35, 40 yards, he was going to roll over, but he didn't always. So I went to, after that, I put a scope on it and started shooting some heavy shot. And man, that thing weighed like 12 pounds. I enjoyed hunting with it, but it's, a lot of guys still use them. I mean, I think the thing is, if somebody wants one, it's so that they can see a little bit better further, so that they can have the magnification, is really just the main reason. Because the red dot will do everything better than a scope, aside from the magnification. I've seen less and less of those, probably.
I shake way too much to be trying to use a scope with any kind of zoom when it comes to a turkey. Yeah. I'd miss every stinking bird I shot at, man. There's no way.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I know I
can. I've got one right here. All right. So I've got a Burris Fast Fire 3 right here. It's so light, I can't even tell. I think they weigh like about an ounce. So for people that maybe don't really know how little they are, this is how little they are. So, you know, you've got a big scope that weighs over a pound versus this guy. Mm-hmm. So it just adds so much less weight. You know, it's a negligible amount.
Yeah,
dude. And now with a lot of the TSS loads and a lot of people switching, like I did, to a 20 gauge or even a 410, and like coming up with these like freaking light turkey guns that are just killers.
5.5 pounds.
It's awesome, man. I love it. There was a big difference for me. For example, Joey, when we were in Montana and hiking up those mountains with that little SA-20 with a red dot versus this super mag 12 gauge what is it, 810, I guess.
870.
Sorry. Yeah, the 870 super mag, which is a small gun, right? Like for a 12 gauge, it's a pretty small gun. Mm-hmm. That Joker is so stinking heavy. Yeah. And now, like, with all the stuff, we were at NWTF this past year at the Mossberg booth, and I was looking at their youth model stuff, their youth model 20 gauges. They're like, I just bought a BB gun for my son that's bigger than a lot of these turkey guns that people are making. It's pretty cool, man.
Will you guys all be at the NWTF convention?
I will be, for sure.
Absolutely.
You'll have to make sure and stop by.
We will be stopping by. Absolutely.
Yeah. Booth 1829.
Got it. That, like Parker was just saying, that's the reason I'm making the switch to 28 this year. After the new year or whatever, I'm going to get a 28 and get it set up. Because with shell technology these days, I mean, I'm, except for maybe like waterfowl, like goose hunting and stuff like that, 12 gauges, I think, are just going to get less and less common because
deer hunters,
TSS, bismuth, all these other, you know, alloys that they're putting out. Shells are just going to continue to get better, and there's going to be less reason to have, you know, those magnum, you know, 12 gauge loads.
Yeah.
I think the 20, 28 is ideal for turkeys. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of guys are the 410. I have carried mine probably 8 or 10 times and haven't even had a turkey in range the times I've taken it. And then I'll pick up the 20 gauge and kill one the next morning. But I'm afraid the 410, you know, there might be one out there 40, 45 yards. And I'm afraid if I shoot and, you know, I 100% know if I'm on him and I shoot, he's going to flop over. But I'm afraid if I miss or something, I'm going to wrap it around a tree and never carry it again. I know when I pull the trigger on the 20 gauge, it's over with. So, but I think 28's right there with it. You can ounce and a quarter ounce and 3/8 load, ounce and a half even is plenty in the TSS for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What's your what's your absolute favorite turkey gun setup? So like the gun? You sound like you've got several turkey guns that you take, and you have shot several. What's your favorite combination?
So I'm actually switching this year, but I've been carrying a 20-gauge 870 with the SureShot stock, which Walter just got one of this week. It's got to be Bottomland or Greenleaf, original Bottomland. But I like a pistol grip on a turkey gun. A lot of guys hate them. I love them. I like to be able to, you know, set it right here on my shoulder. You can kind of, you know, keep it straight, you know, without having your hand on top. I love a pistol grip. And then, of course, I've got usually a Burris Fast Fire 3 or Vortex Venom on the rib. So I've got, like you said, multiple setups. But I'm actually going to the Mossberg SA-20 this year. I haven't found a perfect – my 870 is shot fine, but it's not great. And I'm just searching for something a little bit better. So I'm going to go with that SA-20 this year. It's light, got a little bit longer barrel. I think the 21's maybe a little too short. I'm a bigger guy. I carry a 21-inch barrel, and it's like right here, the back of my head when I'm walking. So that little longer barrel, I think I'll feel a little safer when the end of the barrel's right there while I'm walking. So
that, to me, that's ideal. The SA-20 looks normal size on me. SA-20 looks just right on me. It comes up to about right there. Dude, I love that gun, though. It's a sweet shooting gun.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you, the man behind Meadow Creek Mounts, do you have a gun that requires a Meadow Creek mount?
What do you mean by that?
Like, are you using a gun that is already set up to just put your?
I mean, a lot of my guns are drilled and tapped, but you know, and a lot of my customers, you know, they still use the mount on guns that are drilled and tapped because to me, it's more than just that. It's getting it out there, getting it in that position. I got, you know, people that call me every week, you know, and they want to do it. And sometimes they just want the optic. And I try to talk them into a mount, tell them why. And once they try it, they love it. So yeah, even the 870 I've been carrying forever, I drilled and tapped it before I came out with Meadow Creek. So it's got some old rusty holes right in the top of the receiver that are all gummed up from when I had a mount sitting on it. And,
That was the question. That was perhaps the better way to ask the question is, are you still using it on your guns because of that benefit?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Every gun I hunt with has it on there. Yep.
Excellent.
Has the Meadow Creek. Yeah.
As far as optics go, I kind of wanted to see have you explained, if you can, like, what are the differences between the reflex sights, a prismatic sight, and a holographic sight? Because when, you know, I think red dot is like an umbrella term almost.
Yeah, for sure.
Or at least it is to me. You know, when I say red dot, it could mean, you know, the big long tube sights or, you know, whatever. So can you explain to the people and me what the differences are in all those?
Yeah, as far as the way they look, so most of those tube style, like I think True Glow has what they call like a gobble. What do they call that? Gobble stopper or something.
I think Catman used to have one.
I think a lot of those tube style sights are prismatic. It's just kind of the way the light and the dot bounce inside of that tube. So most of what we sell is, I'll hold it up again so people can see it. Is the Fastfire 3 is a
That's a reflex, right?
A reflex, it left me for a second. So, and really the difference between the reflex and the holographic. So if you know what and I actually had one here, but I sent it back for warranty. If you know what the EOTechs look like, those are like, most of those are a holographic sight. The big difference between the holographic and the reflex is kind of the way the light is actually made in the sight and projected. The holographic's just a lot more, there's a lot more to it. This is just simply a light that reflects off of the glass, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, you sight it in, it moves up and down. So the holographic are more expensive just because of the way they work. They can be a little clearer, a little bit more accurate. The holographic can give kind of if you imagine like a circle with a dot, it can be kind of 3D looking. For turkey hunters though, the reflex is the way to go. You know, the price range, $150 to $300 sights are just perfectly fine for turkey hunting. I don't see the need to put a $600-$800 EOTech on there.
Right, right. Are there some features that or tell us about some of the features that you like and dislike about some of these red dots. I mean, there are pros and cons to everything. And I will say one con that I've seen is the auto brightness feature. And it's easily resolvable. You can just turn it off. But I remember specifically one turkey last year where the auto brightness, it was in low light and it thought it was more light than it really was. And so my red dot kind of like star burst on me. And it saved at least a shot being flung at a turkey. I don't want to say that it saved that turkey, but I probably could have at least got on him a lot better. But what are a couple things that you adjust or that you do when you're mounting a red dot?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up as a con because I see auto brightness as a pro, but I've never had an issue with it. So, and that's one of the great things about all the different models. You know, we've got, they make one for everybody. You know, if you don't care about auto brightness, you can buy a cheaper one that doesn't have it, you know, or if you want to spend a little extra on it. So, auto brightness is great. Auto shut off. But you know, a lot of people worry about the battery in it. A lot of these are 10, 20, 50,000 hour batteries. You know, I tell everybody put one in at the beginning of the season. So that's not really a big thing to worry about. Mm-hmm. Some of the other features that I talked about green dot, whether there's a circle, some of them just come in like the Fastfire 3 only comes with either a 3 MOA dot and then you've got an 8 MOA dot. So that's basically 3 inches at 100 yards versus 8 inches at 100 yards. That sounds really small when you say 3 inches at 100 yards for a red dot. So I get people, they're like, I think I want the 8. And I tell them, look, I sell 100 of the 3s to every one of the 8s. 8 to me is, and I'm sure it's fine, but I would honestly rather it be smaller than 3. It feels bigger than that in the window to me. You know, especially the brighter it gets, the kind of it looks bigger, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got the different colors, the different reticles, the Burris Fastfire 4. You can change the reticle in it, so it comes with a circle dot or a dot. Most of the Vortexes are just the dot. You have the Swamp Fox, the Hollow Suns. There's so many different options for everybody that there's one that, you know, people ask me what I want, or, you know, they ask, what would you shoot? And I'm like, well, I'll tell you what I would shoot, but we sell all these that we've tested and used. And we test them for a reason because we don't want to sell anything that is junk, but we have all these different models so that you can fully customize it exactly the way you want it. So that's great. You see it as a con and I see it as a pro. That just proves that everyone's different. So
well, I think, it's a con until maybe 30 minutes after sunrise and then you can turn on auto brightness and it's fine. And that was just one instance where I was really, you know, looking down the sight at a turkey and wished that it was not as bright.
I got you. Well, luckily, if it was on your gun that has a Meadow Creek, your hand was right there. You were able to just hit the button. You didn't have to move it all back here. You would have to move. So that's another, you know, we go back to the features just of the mount. You know, it's right there by your hand. Yeah. You can just reach your thumb. I'll get back on. You can reach your thumb up and change it. So, the auto brightness on these, as soon as you click it on, of course, it's on auto. Then you just click it to high, medium, low. It's that simple. Most of them are similar. If they have auto brightness when you turn it on, that's what it's in. But you can easily adjust up or down from there.
Yeah. All these optics have really changed the way that we pattern shotguns. I know I was in the camp for years of just putting a paper plate on a fence post in a tree and shooting a thing and making sure there were plenty of pellets in there. And that was good enough. How do you pattern and zero your red dots now? And the reason I ask that is I think a lot of people, when they first get a red dot, they're scared to death of having to shoot a bunch of these high-dollar TSS loads to get their gun patterned when, in reality, you know, you could probably use, you know, some field loads, some dove loads to start out with. So kind of walk us through how do you pattern your shotgun now.
All right. So first of all, there's two things. You have to pattern it and you have to sight it in. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that's the same thing. They go shoot and they think they're patterning it and sighting it in. That is not the same thing. You know, it used to be when you didn't have sights for your gun, when you would try different loads and chokes, you not only wanted one that had a good pattern, but you wanted it to be close to the center. So that was a big factor. Now that's a non-factor. You can, you know, if it's shooting 3 feet to the left, it doesn't matter if you put a red dot on it. So, first of all, I say, you know, figure out what load you're going to shoot. Don't worry about where it's hitting. Shoot a big piece of paper. You don't even really have to have the red dot on it for that. Once you've got that figured out, when you mount the optic on there, I like to bore sight it, but I do that by eye, you know, that you're not shooting a rifle into a 1-inch circle. So I'll pop the barrel off since the optic is on the barrel. I can look across the yard and aim at a certain split in a tree, you know, set it up on the deck, and I get the dot right where I can see through the barrel on the same spot. So after that, I go to 15 yards with a high brass dove load. Doesn't really have to be a high brass. That's just some kind of field load, something that's cheap, and get it. It'll blow a hole at 15 yards. Get it sighted in perfectly. And then I tell people, you know, even though most people pattern at 40, I don't necessarily think you have to sight in at 40. You can check it. I like to sight in at 30 to 35 because I know at 40 I'm going to have enough spread. If I'm off by 6 inches, it's going to kill the turkey anyway. At 20 yards, if you're off by 6 inches, you're not going to kill the turkey. So, you know, get to 30, 35 yards. Then you put your turkey load in. Make sure you've got your choke, your turkey load that you came up with earlier that you wanted to shoot, and fine-tune it from there. It's liable to shoot. It will shoot different than the field loads for the most part. But once you only have to take, you know, a couple times to shoot. And also, my buddy Devin Duncan has a really good video on YouTube. Of how to sight one in. If you look up the bullseye to bullet hole, or is it bullet hole? Bullseye to bullet hole. So yeah, basically, effectively, if you've got some kind of sandbags, all right, just for example, say you shoot, I'm just going to make this easy, say you're hitting 4 inches high. Well, anybody that shoots a bow knows that means you need to move your sight up 4 inches. Something you'd move your pin, but in the scope or on the red dot, you're actually turning the dial to what says down, but that actually moves the dot up. So if you leave it in the sandbag, go back to center of the target is here, but you hit way up here. If you'll move your dot, watch your dot move up to where you hit, you really, if you know what you're doing, can sight it in one shot. You really don't even have to shoot again if you've got a good solid rest that you can move it to where you hit. Of course you want to confirm, but there's no sense in chasing it around, hoping it moved. However, if you can hold the gun still and move it to where it hit, then that's where it's going to hit again. So check out his video. He did a good job on it. So,
yeah, I watch that video at least once a year. You know, that real early springtime.
It makes sense when you kind of realize what's going on.
I didn't even know Devin Duncan had videos on YouTube.
He doesn't have very many, I don't think. So
that's probably the most popular one on his channel.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's made its rounds, and for good reason. Just like Greg said, that is an excellent video when you're going to sight in a red dot. It'll save you some shells.
Yeah. I get people that call me or, you know, they get confused, I think, more. It works the exact same way as a scope, but since you can see that it says up, they get confused when they turn it up and it moves down. It just it blows people's minds. They're like, why is it going down if I'm turning it up? It's because it's moving your pattern down. It's moving the dot up. So,
what kind of experience do you have as far as testing different loads? I know we're talking about optics, but I kind of want to pick your brain about a little bit stuff here while we got you. As far as choosing the right load for, you know, certain size choke, pellet size, and things like that. You sound like you've, you know, patterned a lot of shotguns. So
I wouldn't consider myself an expert in that, but I have been loading my own TSS for 10 or 11 years now. I've tested, you know, different sizes. The thing to me, I feel like the days of testing chokes and loads are gone. It's going to be hard to, you know, we'll just take 20 gauge, for example. It's going to be hard for us, any load of straight nines or eights by nines, 8.5 by 9.5, something in that range. And, you know, a lot of people shoot the 555 chokes. They shoot great. They're a little hotter. I prefer like a 562 or 570 myself, but you could almost shoot a factory full and it's going to shoot better than what we're using 10 or 15 years ago out of the 12 gauge. So that's the thing to me. You don't have to, they might be expensive, but you're not going to waste $100 when you get a new gun trying to find new chokes, or more than 100 if you're trying different chokes and all that. So a high quality choke, So there's plenty of brands out there. Any of the big name brands are fine. Same thing with ammo, you know. Like I said, I load my own, but all most of the big companies are loading TSS now, even, you know, whoever. So
one of the things I kind of noticed, can get
into ammo wars, so I'll leave it at that. I've got friends in the and it's a lot. There's a lot of you know, yeah. I just won't. I'm not gonna argue over different ammos, but any of the TSS is good.
Well, one of the things that I kind of noticed, especially when TSS started.
Can I pause for just a second?
Yeah.
Why you still load your ammo if it's all said and decided? Why wouldn't you just buy it? I'm curious.
What? Was that for me?
Yeah. Yeah. You said you said it's kind of.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you.
So, like, the testing and everything is kind of, like, decidedly over, right? So, why are you still loading your own ammo? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's cheaper.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Hmm.
I never really loaded my own for testing. It's just, you know, it costs about half as much if you load your own, so.
It makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. All right.
When you're talking about TSS. Yeah. Yeah, you should totally, here's the thing. If somebody would, like, list out all the things that I need for that, I still wouldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You have to do it. It's easier to just go buy, you know, a couple boxes and go hunt. So, yeah, most of my – that wasn't the reason I started loading my own, wasn't really for testing because, you know, it all shoots good. So, I mean, there was some testing in the beginning, but for the most part, a good quality load from one of the guys that would provide that was easy to load and shoot, try it. It shot good. I go hunt. I mean, I had a trap, so I've built a couple different traps where you shoot the TSS into it and you can harvest it and reshoot it, but I hardly ever do it. It's like I don't shoot enough to even fool with it. Shoot once or twice at the beginning of the year to make sure the gun's still on, go hunt. So
It's like it's like processing deer. Like I always say, man, if I just had all this stuff, man, I'd probably still just drop it off at the processor, to be honest. Sometimes it's easier, but I will say, I think like hand loads, whether it's for rifles that you have for deer, turkeys, whatever you're doing. If somebody tells me that, I don't ask them like any more questions. I just assume these guys are hardcore turkey hunters or deer hunters. Like they know what they're doing because they load all their own ammo. So like if somebody wants to just be that guy, then just start doing that.
I think the rifle's definitely a little bit different. It's a lot harder to get, you know.
Yeah.
Rifles are a lot – well, I won't say they're more temperamental, but you're talking, you know, a lot more accuracy than a shotgun to begin with. So little differences make a big difference in rifle ammo.
Absolutely.
Do you think there's a – I mean, with TSS nowadays, especially with all these – there's so many pellets in a load now. And I remember when I was shooting those 3.5-inch 12-gauge, I think it's number 8 and number 10 blend Federal shells. There were 1,000 pellets in that.
Yeah, there's a lot in that.
And I almost did through a awesome pattern. It would flat fill up a pattern board. But because there were so many pellets, I would have a lot of strays. Is there a correlation? But can you have too many pellets for the choke? Like, can you have too tight of a choke for, you know, let's stick with 12 gauge, I guess. Like, if I'm shooting that many pellets, do I need that more open choke instead of those, I guess, what is it, 6.65 or 6.66?
Yeah, so just in general, yes, you know, but a lot of times a little bit of testing will tell you. That's why I just err on the side of a little bit more open choke. I don't have the need to shoot a 5.55 and shoot over 300 pellets in a 10-inch circle, you know, that's kind of the standard, if some people aren't aware. Kind of the standard for turkey choke and load patterning is how many pellets are in a 10-inch circle at 40 yards. If you have, it used to be, if you had 100, you were doing really good because that pretty much ensured that every time you pull the trigger, if his head's in that circle, he's dead. So now guys are shooting 250, 300 of the TSS. And then looking for the beauty of the TSS, though, is that you have more in the outside of that. So
yeah,
there are strays that are even outside of the, say, a 20-inch circle. But if you've got a really good 10 and then some more out there, if you're off by a little bit and you've still got some out there, you're still going to kill him. So,
right.
Yeah, that's pretty much it on that.
Hey, I could probably nerd out for the next 3 hours talking exactly about this. But
Joey, he keeps looking down at this. We have an itinerary, guys.
I've got my notes.
There's an itinerary. There's a list of things. And Joey keeps looking down. I'm like, that's not on the itinerary.
Yeah.
Joey.
He has his own.
That son of a gun got his own list to keep asking questions.
If I don't write stuff down, I'll forget about it. So
I'm trying to look at ways I can help Joey out. Like I could do that. That's not even on there.
Sorry, I kind of took a detour since we started talking about this stuff. But this stuff like really interests me because with with shell technology and optics and shotgun barrels and everything else, it's getting more and more like rifle shooting. Like you have to pay attention to ballistics and you have to know how a load performs and your barrel needs to be doing this and so on and so forth. So it just really gets my wheels turning. And especially for someone like me that buys a box of ammo off the shelf and will buy my choke tube and put it in my gun and roll with it. And then, now I need to see if this box of shells that I just bought, if it really works, or if I need to buy a few more boxes there's so many different variables here. And, so I don't want to say I'm trying to find like the shortcut, to finding the right answer, but I'm trying to maybe simplify it for a lot of guys,
going back to what I said a minute ago, the beauty of it is it's all so much better than what we were using 10, 15 years ago that a good quality, extra full or tighter choke, in the 20 gauge, a 562, 570 with a ounce of 5/8 of TSS, I would guess there's not one that shoots bad. So, they're all good. So
yeah, as far as setting your gun up and taking the step further, have there been any modifications that you've made to shotguns to kind of that fits your needs and what you prefer, like port and barrels, forcing cones, anything like that? Have you done any of that?
I haven't done any of that. Even back when I was shooting lead, I was probably just too cheap to do it. I know it really made guns come alive back then. And there are still guys that do it now. It still does or can and does help with the TSS. Mm-hmm. But it's just not something that really has to be done anymore.
I got you. Dude. Do you know if port, like porting a barrel or using a ported choke, does that help with recoil at all? Or does that hurt your velocity more than anything?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Simple enough.
It's crazy, though, what you're saying, because you're absolutely right. And I know Walt can relate with this, too. I shot that stupid Maverick 88, I got it whenever I was, I don't know, like 11 or something to shoot doves with. And I shot that thing up until probably about 7 years ago. That was my turkey gun. And pretty much once TSS came about, it was fine. You know what I mean?
There's a chance it might be your best shooting gun. You just never know. Some of the cheapest guns I've had throw the best patterns,
Absolutely.
You don't have to have a $1,200, $1,500 shotgun to kill a turkey. I mean, everybody knows that. But a $1,200 or $1,500 shotgun has zero chance of always being better than a $300 870 or a $300 Mossberg 500. There's just
or a $99 Maverick 88.
Maverick 88. Did I use that thing as a boat paddle? I got boats unstuck with it. I mean, I gave it to Pat the other day because I've moved on to other things, and he's got two young boys, and I'm sitting here thinking this is a perfect gun for a young kid. I don't even think I ever cleaned
it. No, it's not. It's a terrible gun for a young kid.
Why?
It's like the worst gun in the world for a young kid.
Why?
But it's my home defense gun right now.
Is it?
Yeah, heck yeah. It's laying
by
the bed.
Jesus Christ. It's a long barrel on self defense. You going to beat them up?
Hey, look, they're going to catch a load. I've got a turkey load in it right now.
When you were saying, all these guns, all these old guns or whatever, they could potentially be the best shooting guns. Do you think that has more to do with the barrel, more so than anything?
It could. It's just, I think it's just, who knows? I mean, that's pretty much where it all comes from, though. You know, I mean, that's really all that matters. I've swapped barrels on guns, you know, just because I want, like on my 870, I had it dipped and all that with the best shooting barrel that I had. I had three or four 870s laying around. I was like trying to see which one was the best back then, but like I still keep going back to they all shoot good enough. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's not something you got to spend a bunch of money testing all the time. So
they can all get at least one pellet.
That's right.
All it takes is one pellet, right?
Yeah, they all can do that.
Well, I guess one of the things that I was kind of wondering about is, you know, these long turkey hunters, you know, we want a kind of a shorter barrel, but I've seen a lot of data that shows a shorter barrel will reduce your velocity. And so that may not make a difference, you know, between, you know, 12 gauge to 12 gauge, you know, to 12 gauge, but it could make a difference if you're trying to make the switch to, let's say, a 12 gauge to a 28 or a 12 to a 410. Like you may want that extra velocity in those smaller sub gauges to ensure that you're getting a good pattern and you're getting a lethal pattern out to that 40 to 45 yard mark or whatever range that, you know, you're wanting to kill turkeys at.
Agree. Yeah, so like I said, I'm actually going to the 24-inch this year, not because the 21 wasn't enough, but, yeah, the shorter you get, you start really losing velocity below 21 in those 20 gauges. It drops off a good bit because you're thinking, you know, you're more than – to go from 24 to 21, that's like 15% less barrel length. You're going to lose a good bit of velocity there. So it makes a difference for sure. So I think 24 is a sweet spot, 22, 24, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and you know, with the 12 gauge, with the right choke and an 18 or 20 inch barrel, I mean, you could still kill turkeys at 40 yards, no problem. But you know, like I said, you start hacking off barrels on your 410s and these smaller shotguns, and it could make a huge difference.
Yep, for sure.
I would love to see somebody out in the turkey woods with like a sawed off 410. I just.
I have one. It's a,
they're out there. I know they are.
Are they there? Do they exist? Yeah. They're somewhere in Florida, probably.
Oh, no doubt about it. Probably it's probably that guy that got mad at you at the trailhead.
Yeah, he definitely was opening morning.
Opening morning last 100%. Year.
No, I'm pretty sure he threw. I'm pretty sure he took out a 270 out of his truck that day.
Were you in Florida opening morning last year?
I was. Yeah, and we got
the north zone or south zone.
North.
Yeah, I was too. I killed a good one down there up in the morning. It was a
when you said 270, nice Greg was like, "Yep, that was me."
It wasn't me.
That was me. Yeah, I thought you looked familiar. You put a turkey feather in my window.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
Can you? I was asking or talking about this the other day with somebody. Can you still use a rifle in Florida for turkeys?
I think
you can. No, they outlawed that
during gun season. You can. There is a short during fall, like the fall season, but I do not believe you can during gun season anymore because it says rounds. So, like, the state of Florida doesn't tell you what you can do. They just tell you what you can't do, which I kind of appreciate. It's like rounds, shotguns, less than number two shot or something like that.
Yeah.
At least the WMAs I hunt. But those are also – oh, never mind.
Well, this might make the Legion mad a little bit, but a lot of the turkeys that I killed growing up were with a rifle in Texas because we could shoot them from the shooting house, from the blind during deer season, you know what I mean? So I know about that life. Actually, my first turkey I ever killed was with a 30-06.
Really?
Sure was. It absolutely was.
Out of the tripod. I want to say West Virginia is still legal.
Yeah, it is legal in West Virginia. Mm. It's crazy.
That's what I was talking with. I was talking with Paul Campbell not long ago about, you know, there's so much uproar and outcry about, you know, fanning and, you know, the way people hunt turkeys with decoys or just whatever. There is never any discussion about those, everybody out west, you know, smacking them with rifles from 200 yards away. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't even touch that. Like, it's almost like that's so far-fetched and out of the realm of southern turkey hunting that they don't even bother to even be mad about it. You know, we'll just be mad about all this other stuff that's happening close to home. But I always thought that was interesting. And I saw on, I forget what group it was, either turkey hunting group or just a Western hunting group from Wyoming or something. Somebody had shot a hen, not even a bearded hen, just a hen with a rifle. Legal. I mean, it's totally legal wherever the guy was. And I was like, man, this guy is just about to get crucified, flayed open, skin alive, burnt at the stake, everything. They're about to light this man up. But oddly enough, the comments were actually civil. And that's what kind of made me think. I was like, if he'd done this in Tennessee, you know, even if it was legal to shoot a hen in Tennessee, like with a rifle or something like that, like he would get drugged. But no, I mean, they don't even bother. They don't even care about it once you cross Mississippi River.
Is it South Dakota, maybe, that it's legal in? I remember watching a Western turkey hunt on YouTube, and this guy, I hope he's listening to this because it was epic. this guy, there was two guys. One of them shot a bird with a recurve bow. And from the same spot, somebody else shot one with a 30-30. Like, they were hunting together. And one of them had a recurve, and the other one had a 30-30, and they both shot turkeys that day. And it was completely legal, and it was one of those Western states. I can't remember. Was it fall? You don't know whether to be, like, really mad or really impressed with the one guy. One guy shot it with a recurve. That's cool. The other guy shoots it with, you know. Yeah, it's weird. It's wild, man. And that is funny. I've never – you don't hear any uproar about that. Like, pretty much ever.
Mm-mm. So – I don't know. Maybe we choose what we want to get mad about, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll get pissed about somebody carrying a feather into the woods with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Waving that around.
Mm-mm-mm.
All I care about.
Well, Greg, tell us.
Go ahead, Joey.
I was gonna tell Greg, like, what's in store for Meadow Creek, you know, coming up? You got anything new coming out? I did want you to talk about this, the co-witness, you know, backup site.
Yeah.
That's relatively new. I think so. Yep. I think that's right. Tell us about that. And then tell us I'll about anything that you're willing to tell us about, you know, what's coming up for you.
So the co-witness backup site is pretty cool. We came out with that last year. Foley released it in April, so it was kind of late for a bunch of the turkey hunters. Most people aren't putting an optic on their gun in April. Or, you know, they might be, but they're behind if they are. So what it does is it allows – so imagine you're looking through the window of the sight. Down at the bottom, there's a rear sight, which is two fiber optics, and then you have the front sight out on the rib. So you can still see fully through the – through the sight, just down at the bottom, you've got the sight. So it mounts with the optic screws. So there's no other, you know, you pull out the screws it's screwed in with, put these in. It's not going to move. If it's mounted onto your mount, it's not, you're not going to shoot again. So aside from sighting that in, which there's an easy way to do that if you want to really get into it. If your red dot's already sighted in, you can just sight the backup sight into exactly where the red dot's sighted in. So it's one of those things where when you're looking down the barrel or when you're looking through the sight, if you've got it your dot centered, this is completely out of the way. And you move your head down to line up those sights, your dot's going to come down as well, and it's going to be lined up with the fiber optic. So it's just a backup sight in case your battery goes dead, you know, in the woods. It does happen, even though, I mean, there's something that can happen. Luckily, I've never had it happen in the woods, but I put a battery in them every year. So it's just something that a lot of guys are really concerned about. You know, if something can go wrong, it will. So if you have the backup sight, you know, I have friends that have been hunting and here comes a bird and the red dot's not on. So that backup alleviates that.
That is sweet.
It's really cool.
I am waiting for that to happen to me because, you know, we talked about, or it got mentioned earlier, about tens of thousands of hours of battery life, you know, for these red dots. And I'm honestly trying to remember. I think I bought my red dot. It was the same time I bought that Meadow Creek mount. It was back in 2020. And I don't think I have put another battery in that thing. But I tell you what, I'm going to do. I need to put a battery.
It's like $3 at Dollar General next time you're there. And just get
I know. I ain't superstitious, but turkey hunting is kind of superstitious.
I'm a little superstitious. Yeah. I'm not superstitious. I'm just a little stitious. Yeah.
Like, I would just, now that you said it, I would probably go ahead and change it.
I need to change it. And I think I say this to myself every year, and I'm just an idiot and just completely forget about it. And then I'm kind of almost looking over my shoulder, you know, turkey hunting, waiting for this thing to die. And now that I've really talked about it, I'm envisioning it in my mind right now. You know, I'm going down to Florida for the opening week, you know, in the North Zone or whatever. And I'm envisioning an Osceola in that red dot and the red dot just disappearing forever. Yeah. And the turkey just walking away.
I have gotten out of my bed at like 3 o'clock in the morning, gone to my safe, opened my safe, pulled the gun out, put my hand up, and been like, okay, yeah, I turned that off. Cause I like that. My biggest nightmare in life. I'm not a very good turkey hunter. My biggest nightmare in life is I'm going to get an opportunity on a public land bird. And just like Joey said, I'm going to raise that gun up and it's just going to say, ha ha. And the bird's just going to run off, you know, like,
Well, one good habit that I do have is when I get the gun out of the truck to go hunt, I turn the red dot on and I turn it off right before I put it back in that truck. You know, I think I've got the Vortex Venom or whatever, and I think it's got one of those auto shut off or whatever. If it doesn't do anything after like 12 hours or something, it'll turn itself off. So that'll save you. But still, I mean, I'm not using it. I turn it off, and I got into that good habit. But apparently, I'm too stupid to change a battery in the thing once a year.
Well, one of the things now that you say that, one of the different features I forgot about earlier is the shake awake. So, a lot of them, you know, on the shake awake, a lot of those have a shorter time. You know, they might only stay on for 30 minutes and then shut off. But if you if you're sitting there and you barely, like, literally move it that far, it'll turn on. So that also means when you're riding around with it in the truck, it's probably on the whole time. But that's another thing that you're not going to have to. And I always turn mine on when I get out of the truck. Same thing. I'm not going to wait until I'm set up on a bird to turn the thing on. I'm not that worried about the battery. Like I said, it's a $3 battery at Dollar General. Just put one in it. So, but that shake awake's really cool, cool feature on a lot of them as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But back to the new stuff. So the Co-Witness, of course, was last year. It's a optic specific thing though, because the way all the different optics are, it's got to be the right height, the right screw pattern, everything. So we just have them for the Fast Fire 3 and the Vortex Venom right now. But I've pretty much got the other ones done. We'll have those early spring for, you know, I'm not going to have them for every optic, but just some of the most popular ones that we sell. We are working on just some new sights, new mounts, and some other stuff that's not related to optics as well that probably won't be done this year, but it'll be next year. But we've got some really exciting, really cool projects. We've got some working on some stuff that every turkey hunter will have to have once they see it. It's really neat. So I'm excited about that. But it's a multi-year project, so it'll probably, hopefully by next spring, we'll have those done.
I swear to God, that's awesome. If it's a green leaf 870 stock, I'm gonna kill you because I'm gonna have to have it.
Well, I'm out of those. Okay, good. Thought about getting some more.
Yeah, I have unfollowed you on Facebook just so I don't see any of your listings because I just don't. I don't want to spend any more money.
There we go. Well, I don't have any more. So
same.
Oh man,
Walt Parker, you got anything else for Greg?
Man, I enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, that was great. I just got to learn the whole time.
Dude, I'm there right now, and it's December the 21st. Woo! This got me.
Everybody except the Alabama deer hunters and maybe some of the Mississippi deer hunters, everybody else is ready for turkey season. So.
I are one. I am an Alabama deer hunter.
I'm actually going next week, so I'll be hunting for about a week. And, well, I don't know, 4 or 5 days probably. So, yep,
in Alabama?
Yep.
Heck yeah, man.
Yeah, it should That's be a good awesome. Time.
I've noticed in our Patreon group, you know, especially I've really noticed it this year, but I've, you know, kind of noticed it a little bit before, but all those Florida guys down there, when you get the Thanksgiving, you know, comes and goes, you get Thanksgiving out of the way, and then December starts rolling around. Mm-hmm. Couple of their wheels just start turning a little bit more for turkeys because we got a couple, you know, subgroups. You know, there's deer hunting group and there's turkey group or whatever. And I've gotten, you know, turkey as my one of my favorite threads. So I always check the turkey thread in case something pops up. But it would stay, you know, barren for months. There'd be, you know, one or two messages every now and then, you know, through the polo. But now, since the last couple weeks in December, like, it's just more and more, like, they're it's getting close for them, because it's, what, less than probably, 70 days or something? Like, just a little over a couple months, nearly, for –
That's crazy. For, literally – here in Alabama – wow. Here in Alabama
– go ahead.
we end February the 10th is when our deer season ends. And then if you, like me, go turkey hunting in Florida, you got like 3-4 weeks before.
Yep.
Like, it's really no time at all. Like, you better be thinking about it. You better be thinking about all the new gear. If you're going to get anything new, like this kind of stuff, you know, sitting here talking about this, that's got me kind of wanting to shoot that Maverick 88 with a Meadow Creek mount on it now. You know what I mean?
Your time to shine.
No, it's got me fired up. Got my wheels spinning a little bit. Got me thinking about March.
It's
gonna
be
the goal, right? That's what we want for
everybody. That's right.
Can't get here quick enough.
All right, Parker, put a pin in it, man.
Let's put a pin in this thing. If you're deer hunting, good luck. And you guys that are out there still grinding away, we're thinking about you. We're praying for you. But I'm gonna keep thinking about turkeys, I think, from here on out. So, Greg, thanks for coming on and talking with us today.
Thank you, guys.
Real quick, what's your website? Where can people find out more about Meadow Creek?
Yeah. So, of course, we're on Facebook, but we have a website as well, just www.meadowcreekmounts.com. We try to keep everything in stock. I try not to run out. So, we have everything there. We ship very quickly. During the season, I try to ship the same day if you order before noon, but sometimes I'm turkey hunting, so that doesn't happen every day. I know if somebody orders one on April 4th, that they probably wanted it on April 3rd. So yeah. I get it out to them. We have express shipping options and everything too. So it gets to you quickly.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Yep. Great.
Well, again, Greg, thanks for coming on. Joey, Walt, thanks for joining the fire one more time. Let's sign off, boys. We'll see y'all.
Bye.
See ya.